I've always loved water. You can just see the colors of the corals and the vibrancy of the fish and the reef life, and it's incredible.
You hold records, right?
Yes. Yes. Doing well at something that I'm not really even trying out. I was like, oh, okay. I did my first competition October 2020. So proud of myself because that would have been a national record dive. I'm winning every day, but that was an ultimate win. That was a win in the result as well. Dolphins came while we were training in Ibiza. You're underwater. Just you.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Howdy, folks. I just wanted to say a massive thank you to all of you that have liked, subscribed, and left a review for this podcast. It is amazing, and your support means everything. I also want to say thank you to everyone who has become a Patreon member. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon member, then just head on over. The links will be in the description. And as a member, you get exclusive content that no one else gets access to. So it's really beneficial. If you love the podcast and you want more from our guests, for every episode that is on here, there'll be a bonus episode on Patreon. And finally, don't forget to head on over to www.shewhodareswins.com and grab yourself some awesome merch. Yes, there's tons of hoodies and t-shirts. And use the code POD10 for 10% off your first order. Let's get back to the show. So welcome back to the She Who Dares Wins podcast. And my guest this week is Ruth. Ruth, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Well, I'm so excited. Okay, so I'm going to kick off with the first question. She Who Dares Wins. Can you tell me about when you've dared and won at any point in life? Or it could be like your whole life.
So many times.
Love it. Could have so much.
So many times. I mean, for me, even just daring to try something new or different, or something that is not the norm or not expected, this is winning.
Yeah.
Even in the trying, it doesn't matter what the outcome is. It's the magic is in the doing, it's in the trying. So, for me personally, when have I dared and won? Oh, God, I've got so many stories on this.
Well, let's get into it, because so you're a freediver.
Mm-hmm.
Zoe, who is I guess a mutual friend of ours, she said that all the information she's given me is that you came into it quite a bit later.
Yes, yes.
But I'm guessing the love for the ocean, the love for being underwater happened quite early. So when did you first fall in love with swimming?
Gosh, I've always loved the water.
Okay.
And this comes from my mom, who's always had a fear of the water. So my mum didn't want either me or my brother to have that same fear. So I was born first, and pretty much as soon as she could get me into water, she took me to the pool. And as soon as I could be in swimming lessons, I was in swimming lessons. And I've always loved the water, always. I remember going on a holiday when I would have been about 10, I think, and we went to Florida. And we were staying in places with swimming pools, and I was able to swim all day. And I was imagining, I was like, how amazing would this be if you actually had your own swimming pool? You know, this is like dream life, just to spend, you know, all day, every day in the water. So I've always had it. I've always had that connection with the water. And growing up, I've always done water sports as well. And I swam in a swim club from age 8 to 18. I also did kayaking. I played water polo. As soon as I could, I did my scuba certifications. I think I was 13 years old when I started the course. And you had to be 14 to be certified. And I was just turning 14 and got my certificate. And the reason we did it this way, we were living in Hong Kong at the time. And then we left Hong Kong when I was 14 years old. So I had that taste for under the water in the really murky, zero vis South China Sea. but I just loved it.
How did you get into freediving?
Freediving, I was pretty late to freedive. I didn't start freediving till 2015. And that was, I have to do some maths, my late 30s.
Right.
So, And I knew about freediving for a long time before that. I returned back to competitive swimming as a master's swimmer. So when I was around 28, I went back to competitive swimming. I was in Ibiza at the time and training with the Ibiza Masters team. And there was, you know, a guy that used to come to the pool while we're training with this massive big mono fin and weights. And I remember it was just like, it was kind of weird. And I was so focused on swimming and so into swimming again that I wasn't interested in freediving, even though it was, there was opportunities there for me to freedive. So it wasn't until, that would have been like 2008. And it wasn't until 2015 that I felt called to do it.
Yeah.
I was swimming a lot, I was surfing a lot, and I just wanted to feel the water in a different way.
Right.
And finally did a freediving course in Ibiza. And I struggled on my first course. I couldn't equalize with my head down. So equalizing is like when you're on the aeroplane and, you know, the pressure builds up in your ears. So you press on your nose and you blow the air through your tubes to make the ears not hurt. So we have to do the same on freediving as we're going down, because as we descend in depth freediving, the pressure is increasing as we descend. So the airspaces need to be equalized. The airspaces in our eustachian tubes and our sinuses need to be equalized. So we have to push air through. And I struggled with that on my first course. And as soon as I got that, and as soon as I felt free fall, some technical things I have to explain, huh?
A free fall, I'm guessing.
Free fall. So when we start on the surface, we are positively buoyant and we start the dive. And as we go down, we become less and less positively buyant.
Right. Okay.
Okay. And we reach a point of neutral buoyancy. So at that point, if I stopped the dive and didn't move myself, I wouldn't go up or I wouldn't go down. I'd just stay.
Oh, wow.
Just stay there.
Okay. Didn't know that.
No. And then you start to become negatively buoyant.
Right.
So you start to sink. And the deeper you go, the faster you start to sink. So this is what's called the free fall phase of the dive.
Right.
So at this point in the dive, I just relax. I stop moving. I don't need to propel myself because the force is doing that. So it's taking me down to the bottom. And for me, it's the most beautiful part of the dive. It's so peaceful and such an incredible feeling just to be dropping down into the sea. So when I first experienced freefall, that was it. Before that, I had no curiosity for depth. I just wanted to be under the water for longer.
Mm-hmm.
And then that all changed. With freefall, that all changed. And that then I had curiosity for depth.
I watched quite a few of your videos on Instagram, and initially I'm like how, why, what would make someone to do that? And then I see the absolute grace and beauty in the way you go down. Like it is fascinating. And from you just describing there, I can see how it could be incredibly peaceful. And what's going through your mind? Or is that something that you have to train to do certain things as you're going down? Like what's happening to you both in your physical and in your mind as you're descending?
Just in the free fall phase.
Yeah, well, the whole way down, I guess, does it change?
It changes because I have different things to do in different parts of the dive.
Okay.
And how I experience freediving, it's a really deep, deep relaxation with a high level of focus and awareness. So what's going on in my mind, I have to be completely present on what's happening in the dive at that moment. If I'm thinking ahead, or, you know, my mind is in the past, or, you know, maybe I didn't do my dive, maybe I didn't start the dive as well as I could, then I'm going to mess the dive up. I have to be completely present. For me at the moment, I'm still improving on a skill, my equalization skill. So a lot of my focus and awareness when I'm doing my deep dives is on that skill, what I need to do in the body to make that happen. I know that once I've learned that skill and the body will be able to do it automatically, I'll be able to just relax into the dive, and then it's just pure awareness. It's awareness of any sensation in the body, just to make sure that I'm safe. So, and the body will feed back if I'm not, you know, that my positioning is correct, that I'm staying in line with the line, because in depth free diving we have a line that's set to the depth that we want to do,
right?
And in free fall I need to keep myself facing the line, right. So my eyes are softly open, so that I can keep the line in sight. And if I close my eyes, it can happen that I'll turn away from the line and I'll lose the lines. And then this is causing problems because I have to get myself back to it. So it's a really, really high level of focus and awareness with deep relaxation. And the mind, usually on my dives, my mind is calm. My mind is just in the zone of focus and awareness. And it can be before a dive that the mind is chatting, you know, the mind is there. It's like, and you know, sometimes I will say to the mind, why are you thinking this now? You know, how is that helpful? How is that relevant? You know, right now all we're doing is breathing, we're relaxing. And, you know, these things, this is, you know, we kind of park the mind somewhere else and let it get on with whatever it wants to do.
I love that. And so what took you from, you did the course, what took you from the course to I want to compete?
Oh my goodness. It was a slow, it was, again, it was really a long time. I mean, I did my first freediving course in 2015. And it wasn't until 2020 that I actually did a competition.
Okay.
Because at the time I was surfing a lot, not at any great level.
For sure, way better than this.
Loved it. Loved surfing. So I was still kind of more interested in traveling and surfing. But I went through the ADA education system. ADA is one of the governing bodies for freediving. And I really recommend anyone looking to do freediving, do a course and get certified.
Right.
You know, accidents happen when people don't know what they're doing.
Right.
So I went through the ADA education system. I did level 2 in 2015, level 3 in 2016, level 4 in 2017. And at that point, my instructor, and it was pretty easy for me. The equalization has always been my limiting factor. But everything else, I loved it.
Do you feel like it's like when you did it, that it was meant, like one of those, it's, this is meant to be?
Yes, absolutely. And more so, 2018, I did my instructor course, and I never had the intention of freediving to either be an instructor or compete.
Right.
neither of them. So it's funny how things turn out. And then January 2020, I went to Dahup for the first time. And Dahup is a mecca for freediving.
Is that in Egypt?
In Egypt, right. Yeah, in South Sinai. And there's a 92-meter deep blue hole there, which is just beautiful.
Is this the one that I've seen on that Netflix documentary?
Yeah,
it is incredible.
That one, it's stunning.
Yeah,
to train there is majestic. It's like, for me, it's like going into a temple.
Right.
You know, you enter into Blue Hole, and the water is the most gorgeous shades of aqua. You've got corals, you've got angel fish, parrot fish, sometimes lion fish. It's incredible, and this is, you know, this is my playground. This is what I'm going into every morning, not every morning, but the mornings that I'm training.
And do you get those things that are there? I imagine when you're competing, are you aware of those things? Would you get to enjoy them on the training more, in terms of like looking around and seeing what's down there?
It's with freediving, with competition freediving, with depth freediving, all of the awareness is internal. It's not about what's happening externally. It's what's going on internally. I remember my mum asking me as I started to go deeper and deeper, my mum said to me, "Don't understand why you keep wanting to go deeper."
What's down there?
Well, yeah. I was like, do you see more fish? And I said, Mama, I'm not looking for the fish.
That is so funny.
You know, really valid question. I was like, what do you see that's down there that's deeper? And that's a different free diving. I mean, I love free diving when I'm in the water to see that. I'm in the water to experience nature, experience the seas and the oceans and those that inhabit them as they are. I mean, that's, you know, I've had incredible experiences in Baja California, swimming with whale sharks, enormous, and they move so fast. And also, we're lucky enough on time to be with some humpback whales. And, you know, this, the connection I think any sport that's outside gives you with nature, I think is essential. And I think it's really lacking in a lot in today's society. And especially for me, because I'm so, to be in the sea, to be in the oceans, to see the plastic pollution, to see the corals, and especially in Egypt, where I spend a lot of my time, where I do a lot of my training, in the Red Sea. And I'm there and I think, gosh, in my lifetime, these corals could be gone.
Mm.
You know, and not quite soon in my lifetime, you know, by 2050, if we haven't changed how we're living, then
all the world that's going to be lost.
Yes.
Do you think that is like, so I was talked briefly before the podcast about kind of my fear for water and then not exploring what we have in terms of, I went to the Great Barrier Reef, but I never went anywhere near, which is criminal, I know. But is it because you think that we just can't see that massive world that lives below, that not many people get to experience it, that we kind of disregard looking after it?
Totally.
And it's, yeah, it is another world, right?
Mm-hmm. It's magical. Absolutely magical. And even, you know, just to be able to put a mask on and breathe through the snorkel, you don't have to go under the water. You can just see the colours of the corals and the vibrancy of the fish and the reef life. And it's incredible. And I think it's exactly that. When you don't see that and you don't see how beautiful it is and how incredible it is and how, with the knowledge as well, how essential the reefs are for the health of our seas and oceans and all the life that is supported from the reef. You know, there's not that connection, therefore there's not the care that needs to be taken. So I think, you know, I have a responsibility to bring that to people who wouldn't normally see it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't normally have that understanding.
Yeah. And even through the photographs that you post of you diving, the beauty of the ocean, the colours is so evident.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. We've touched on the fact, like, you learned freediving and then you decided to go into competing. You hold records, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got to tell us about these records and how they came about.
How I came about competing was one of my UK teammates, another British freediver, he said, Ruth, are you going to do competitions? And I said, no, I don't think so. And he said, you're ranking pretty highly among, you know, British women already. You know, you must be like in the top five. And I was like, really? Okay, so that piqued my interest. I was like, really? I'm
just five to go.
I'm doing well at something that I'm not really even trying out. I was like, oh, okay. And then my mentor at the time, he said, yeah, with a bit of work, could I think the No Fins national record could be yours. So that also, I was like, okay, not only am I doing good at something that I'm not really trying at, but there's a possibility of some glory here as well.
Take that.
So I could get the national record. And No Fins and freediving, so we've got, in competition, there's four different disciplines. A bit like in swimming, there's four different swim strokes. So no fins is probably my favorite discipline. I love it. It's a modified breaststroke.
Right.
So I'm completely self-propelled, only using my arms and my legs and nothing else to go down and go up. And when I swam, my main stroke was breaststroke. So it's just a beautiful feeling. And when I very first did no fins, it was, I think, I was well into freediving. I was already at level 4, so it would have been 2018. I was diving in the cenotes in Mexico to these incredible sinkholes in Yucatan Peninsula, which are beautiful. Well, some of them are a bit scary, actually. They're quite small and dark. But some of them are really beautiful. My memory of this one was really beautiful. My guide said to me, he said, why don't you try no fins? And I said, I've never done that before. I said, give it a go. All my life, I've swum breaststroke this way horizontally. And then I did breaststroke that way. And it was amazing. And I loved it so much. So this piqued my interest, this conversation. That would have been March. Around March 2020, I think.
Okay.
And then I did my first competition October 2020.
I know that, yeah.
It was amazing. I loved it. It was in the Blue Hole in Dahab. I hadn't done any training for it. I hadn't done any real preparation. I was actually supposed to be teaching freediving in Portugal at the time, and I'd started doing that. Portugal is a quite tough place to teach freediving. It's great for surfing, but the conditions are a bit tough. And we had to cancel the courses because we didn't have the conditions. And I just thought, you know what, I'm going to cut my trip short here. And I'm going to go to Dahab because I can do that competition. So my first competition, I loved the environment. I loved how supportive freediving competitions are. You know, just how invested everyone is in everybody else and how kind. You know, I've not been in a competition environment like this.
It's like a good community. Is all back to the kind of the only thing that I've seen for freediving, which is that Netflix. And that's one thing that I got from that is like how everyone protects each other and encourages each other. It's not a competition where it's like when swimmers come up and someone's got further than the other, it's very much congratulations. It just seems like a family sport.
Yes. I think the nature of the sport itself, because a lot of the time we're training with each other.
Right. So you're competing against, you might be training with as well.
Possibly, yes. You know, it's still such a small sport. So, you know, we're moving around different parts of the world. There's very limited places that we can all go to freedive. So it is very small. Everybody kind of knows everyone. Everyone buddying each other because we always dive with a safety diver.
Right. Do they have to also be a freediver too?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. Because on scuba, you can't ascend. If you're on scuba and you're breathing compressed air, you've got to stop. So you can't ascend as fast as we do as freedivers. So everything, the safety is all done on breath hold as well. So quite often the training is set, like if we go to Dahab, the training, people will buddy with each other and do their training together. So there's a real investment in each other in that way. And I don't know, you want everyone to make their dives because, you know, I know how I feel when I don't make my dive.
Right.
And, you know, this is my friend. I want them to make their dive.
Yeah. I just wanted to take a moment to say a massive thank you to this week's episode sponsor, Extra Tough Boots. Discover the resilience of Extra Tough Boots, where top-notch quality meets unparalleled comfort. Born on the wild seas of Alaska almost 75 years ago, Extra Tough range of 100% waterproof footwear has established itself as the go-to brand for durable and reliable footwear. Trusted by commercial fishermen, pro surfers, ice water swimmers, and outdoor enthusiasts alike, Extra Tough boots truly are Alaskan proven, built for all. I too can personally say that Extra Tough boots are awesome. My experience of wearing them is just ultimate comfort. And they truly can be put to the test in the outdoor environment. So head on over to the Extra Tough website at www.extratough.co.uk and use the promo code 24, She Who Dares wins 25 for 25% off site-wide. That's incredible. Thank you, Exeter. Now let's get back to the show.
That's incredible. And that first competition, what kind of depths are you diving to?
I did No Fins only, and I think I did around 40 metres with No Fins. I maybe did 45, can't remember off the top of my head.
What's the deepest you've...
In No Fins, in competition, my last competition, I finally, not my last competition, the last competition I did No Fins in, because I've changed my focus of my training at the moment. In May last year, I attempted the No Fins national record. So from the original idea that perhaps the record would be possible for me, which was in 2020, it wasn't until 2023 that I was at the stage to actually attempt the record.
Right.
And the attempt was 61 meters. I wasn't successful.
Right.
I attempted three times in that competition. And I'd done it in training. I'd done it in training, and it is the only dive that I've done in training and not done in competition. Let me put that another way. I've always done PBs in competitions. I've always done personal bests. So I kind of went into that competition thinking, you know, I've done this. I've actually done it in training. And on that competition, I really learned how much competition nerves, the perceived pressure of the dive, the excitement of going for my first, it wasn't my first national record, it was my first national record in AIDA. It's a bit confusing in free diving because we've got two federations. Right. So I already had the national records in the other federation because they were slightly lower.
Right.
But this was the ultimate. This was the overall national record, if you like. And that really played a big part in my diving. And it was the first time I experienced in the competition that competition nerves, the impact of competition nerves and competition stress.
So 60 meters, how long are we under the water?
Just under 3 minutes with no fins. So it varies. So I dive deeper in... I've been focused on two disciplines, on no fins and on free immersion. So in free immersion, I'm going up and down using my hands.
Oh, okay.
To pull on the rope.
Yeah, I've seen that. Right, okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So and with free immersion, I go a lot deeper.
What kind of depths are we talking?
That same competition, I did the deepest I've done so far in free immersion, and I did 82 meters. And that was the AIDA national record. It had been standing for 15 years. So this was... Yeah, going back to your question at the beginning, this was, you know, an example of when I dared, and I mean, I'm winning every day, but that was an ultimate win. That was a win in the result as well.
To go from these little kind of just trying it to then someone suggesting, you know, maybe you should compete, these small kind of what seem small, but they're actually huge little steps to then get, you know, the record is incredible. And yeah, do you think that's kind of been a mindset that's got you to do that? Has it just been open and curious? A lot of people I speak to on this podcast are just saying, you know, I was just curious, and it kind of seemed to be a key theme in getting to a certain place. What do you think played a part?
I just love it.
I just absolutely
love it. I love all aspects of it. I love all of my training. I love how I've grown in the last few years, you know, how I've developed in myself, in my outlook, in my own focus, in my ability to push through the harder times, you know, go through, you know, training session after training session of things not working.
I was going to touch on that. So, because I think a lot of people get out of listening to these podcasts when they hear, you know, what you've achieved is incredible. But do you have any of those experiences where you felt, oh, you know, like either failure or disappointment? And then what have they taught you?
Absolutely. I mean, failure, I don't believe in.
Yeah, me neither.
There's
a lesson, right?
There's no such thing as failure. There's learning. There's always learning. Sometimes there's a lot of learning.
Yeah.
But that's part of it. I just keep doing.
Right.
Like without the judgment on it, I don't expect that my training is always going to feel great. I don't expect that my dives are always going to feel great. Though I will always be safe, but they're not always going to feel great. You know,
does fear come in? Like, do you, because you're so comfortable in the water and you've been in the water practically your whole life, does fear still come into diving? Not really.
It hasn't. And now that I'm starting to get deeper, then one of my competition dives in the last, second to last competition I did, there was fear there for one of my dives, and that was really the first time that I'd felt a fear for it. So I welcomed it. You know, I know I've got the tools to work with these things. You know, I'll talk about fear. Let's stay with fear, because otherwise I'll go off on another tangent. So I've got the tools to work with emotions, with whatever I'm feeling. So as I was preparing before my dive, I'm checking in, you know, how I feel in my body, and how I feel in the mind. And I noticed, you know, yeah, there's some fear there. So it's almost like I make that my friend, I welcome it. You know, I've thanked the fear for being there, for trying to keep me safe. It's almost like I had a discussion with the fear of what it was there for. Was there anything I needed to listen to for this fear? And then I just made it comfortable. I gave it a place inside me and thanked it. Said, you know, now we're going to go and do this dive.
Amazing. So, like, you're here, that's okay, but I'm not going to, you know, succumb to you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that sometimes we have to listen. You know, sometimes my body or my mind, because I dive with my mind as well, and if I'm not mentally in the right place, I have to listen to that.
Right.
Otherwise, I'm putting myself in danger, and I'm, you know, putting my safety team, and other divers that are around, I'm putting them in a dangerous situation. But, you know, if they have to do a rescue on me, I don't want to put them in that position. So I've got to make sure I'm always physically and mentally in the correct place for diving. So I think it's always important to listen to what the mind is saying. And then, you know, to figure out, it's like, okay, do I need to not do this dive? Or actually, this is just something that can be there, and we'll just continue.
You'll do. I love that. It's such about mindset, isn't it? And training. So what's the hardest part of the dive? Is it the start? Is it that when you're at the bottom and you're coming back up? Like, what for you is the hardest part?
My equalization.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Honestly, when I explain what for me, it's equalization, and that's my limiting factor, and all divers will have a limiting factor. So it takes a lot of work. It's a lot in my training. It's a lot of repetition. It's not so exciting. You know, sometimes, have I felt despair? Yes. Oh my goodness. Yes. And especially, you know, learning a skill, and I feel like I've been quite slow to learn it. For some people, it's really easy. And for me, it definitely wasn't. Like, it's slow. You know, it's all things that are going on internally. So I can't even watch somebody else really do it and learn from them. It's learning through feeling. And it's a lot of repetitions and a lot of drills. And I think, if I didn't love diving so much, there's no way I would have continued with learning that skill. But I love the feeling of diving so much that it makes it worthwhile to persevere. And I felt for a long time, like just no improvement, just like, or, you know, yeah, there was a good period where everything was just confusing. It felt difficult. It felt like I was never going to get it. It felt like everybody else can do it, I can't. But there's also the stories of others that have struggled and mastered it. You know, it has come. So I'm just like, just stick with it. And I know enough through, like, I started surfing in my early 30s, and, you know, and that was challenging. You know, it wasn't a natural. I didn't just pop up on my board like I thought I would after like 2 days of surfing and be like, I don't know, like Stephanie Gilmore. You know, that didn't happen. And I knew from my experiences in surfing, if I persevere, I will get that. Mm-hmm. It might be slow. And the same with, I learned Spanish as an adult as well. And, you know, everybody was saying, just one day it clicks. And I'm sat there and was like, yeah, right. You know, one day it just clicks. And I was like, when is that day? because sometimes it feels like it's never going to happen.
Uh-huh.
You know, that day that, you know, maybe it happens to everybody else, but is it really going to happen to me?
Mm-hmm.
And in Spanish, it did. In surfing, it did. So I have that reference that I know that if I just keep doing it and if I just keep doing the correct practices and I keep learning, it will click.
I love that. I've recently been reading a book called Grit that was given to me by my brother. It's a woman called Angela. I don't know what her surname is, but she's a researcher in successful people in both business and sport. And one common thing is you can have as much talent, but if you have grit, and it's that keep turning up, keep going, and how that gets people, like those minuscule little leaps, and even sometimes just being plateau, but just keep going. And I've been fascinated by it. And what you've just explained there pretty much embodies that message of, and I think you've got to have a deep love, which you obviously do, for, you know, being in the water, for you to see something through like that. But yeah, grit.
Yes.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Keep going.
Just keep doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I love it so much. And what would you say to anyone that would want to get into, you know, having a go at freediving? Like, what advice would you have for them?
Go with a good school or a good instructor, and make sure as well that you have a good feeling for whoever it is that's teaching you. I think it's really important in when we take on a teacher or a mentor or a coach that there is the right energetic fit, rather than just, you know, go willy-nilly to anyone. So find a good instructor. I've always had throughout my freediving, I've had excellent instructors, and I think it's essential.
And it, from an outside perspective, again, this probably comes from my fear of water, it seems like an incredibly dangerous sport. I'm guessing with the right training that you know, the danger element is taken out of submerge. Is it still classed as, you know, a danger extreme sport?
Apparently.
Right. I mean, you say that so nonchalantly, like, I can't really see it. And I'm like,
you're 90 meters off my wrist down at the edge.
I don't see it. I think because my feelings in freediving, they are so calm and peaceful. And how it leaves me, you know, after diving is just with a beautiful sense of calm and peace. And It's hard to think of it as an extreme sport. I think it's still classed as an extreme sport. I think a lot of the bad reputation freediving gets in terms of safety is for accidents that happen that aren't necessarily freediving accidents. It's people going out that don't know what they're doing and, you know, going under the water on breath hold, they're not trained, they don't have the education, they don't have the understanding of what happens in the body, they don't have awareness of feeling of anything that's happening in the body, and that's when accidents happen. It can come from ignorance.
Yeah.
So So yeah,
to get trained up and
definitely, yeah. definitely. And we never ever dive alone. You know, that always has to be, if I'm a breath hold under the water, I've got somebody who's also trained, knows what they're doing on top of the water, making sure that I surface and that I'm fine when I surface.
I was going to say, again, it's from watching YouTube videos. Is it common for when you see these divers come up and they're kind of, they get to the last meter or so and then they come up and then they're out of it?
Yes. Yeah. The most dangerous part of the dive is the ascent, is the last 10 meters of the ascent, because there's such a massive pressure change from 10 meters to the surface. So the lungs go from being half their size at 10 meters to being back to full size on the surface. So if you think the volume of the lungs is that's what, and it doubles. Wow. So, and with the oxygen levels depleted already, that shift in the pressure can cause us to faint, cause us to blackout.
So it's called a blackout and it's
blackout. I think blackout is very dramatic. I mean, essentially, we faint.
Right, okay.
And then it's...
It's a natural come around or...
Yeah. Usually, yes. But you need somebody there to hold you up because we're in water. Okay. So if you faint on land, so if I fainted just now, you know, I would come back round with a breath.
Yeah.
But in the water, that's where the danger is. You need somebody there to keep your airways out of the water so that when you come back round, you're taking a breath of air and not a mouthful of water.
And is there a chance in that last 10 metres that you would faint before you surface?
Yes. Yeah, the ascent. So with safety, we have safety divers meet us on our ascent. So the maximum depth is usually, can be 50 metres with a scooter, a really deep safety, but it's usually the diver will meet us at about a third of the depth of the dive. So if I was diving 90 metres... Okay, let's scratch that. I'm not great at maths.
Let's not talk about maths.
So a safety divers will meet us usually around a third of the depth of our dive. Can be deeper. We can have deep safety in competitions at around 40 meters, and often they come down on a scooter. So blackouts can happen deeper than just on the surface, and this is why we have safety divers escort us in the last part of our dive. It can be usually around the last 30-40 meters of our dive, we'll have safety with us.
So if anything goes,
we'll have at least one safety in a competition set up. Usually we have three safety, and there's a safety on the surface.
Amazing.
Depending the federation, but yeah.
And I've got one last kind of question. It's probably a very silly question for you, but either on a dive or just training, what's the coolest thing that you've experienced whilst underwater? I mean, there's probably so many, but
oh my goodness. I think there was one time I was doing my breathe up in Blue Hole in Dahab in Egypt, and I was preparing for my dive, and all I heard was my safety diver yell at me, snorkel, and that's kind of all I could hear. So I knew that he'd seen something. I knew that there was something in the water. So I stopped my preparation. I grabbed my mask, and there was a massive manta ray just swimming around the Blue Hole. And we were, I always train really early because I like, it can get quite busy in Blue Hole, and I like to train when it's quiet. So there was just the two of us and this manta for almost an hour.
Oh, lovely.
And it was incredible. I think a few other divers came in, like, with zero interest for the manta. The safety and I were just like, what? How could you not? And, I mean, I'm focused on my training, but when a manta comes in.
Yeah.
So,
and you're in their world, right?
Yes. Yeah, and curious.
Yeah.
You know, they're curious for what we're doing. And then another time in Ibiza, this was the summer 2020, so it was during COVID, and dolphins came while we were training in Ibiza. And in Ibiza, this never happens. In the summer, it's so busy there with boat traffic and people that we don't see that much wildlife. And yeah, we were training and one dolphin came. So that was it. The training session got abandoned because the dolphin went away and they came back with its friend. So we were, you know, it's incredible. So that's when marine life has distracted me a little bit from my training, but it's
the best one in the way. Yeah.
And then in Blue Hole as well. So maybe people would have seen in the Netflix documentary, the arch of the Blue Hole. So 50 meters deep, there's an underwater arch, and it's beautiful.
Have you been?
Oh my goodness, no! I've got no desire. No, be careful what to say. What I've got no desire to do because.
Well, then.
No, I mean that swim through that's
incredibly hard. Yeah.
I'm quite happy just going down the line and up the line, but when we dive, we see the arch. And for me, sometimes the last competition I did was just in Blue Hole in November, and I actually turned my back on the arch as I was coming up. It's mesmerizingly beautiful to be underwater, and there's this bright blue, light-filled arch under the water. And it's gorgeous to see.
I imagine.
You know, it's really, really beautiful to see. But this is a fun dive, not I've been in a competition, you know, because I got a sign and I was like, wow. And I was like, okay, you have a purpose. Just back up to the top. Do your protocol, get a white card, not go up, you know, marveling at the beauty. But there are dives that I have done, and especially in Blue Hole, because it is it's a container and coral encrusted container. This arch is really magical, and it's quite easy to be a little bit lost in the beauty of the dive. And because it's so peaceful down there, you know, we take away all the noise of the world, the energy of the world. You're underwater, just you.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
That's it. I need to learn to swim so I can get on some of this underwater experience. Not nowhere near as deep, but yeah, to experience the, like you say, just being in another world, because it is another world, isn't there?
It's the other world. And you don't have to be deep to have the feeling. Even going, you know, a little bit under, you know, a meter, 2 meters under the water, as soon as we get into the water, our heartbeat slows down. It's
just natural.
Part of a natural reflex. Our heart slows.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Even you don't even have to have the face in the water. You can just be, you know, stood in the swimming pool and the heart, unless you've got I'm assuming
I'm not horrifically
all the studies say, but unless there's a really big fear that I'm sure that being in the water, you know, isn't the heart rate's gonna go down. But in people that don't have a fear of the water, then the heart rate slows. The heart rate slows down. And it's a really nice feeling with having the heart rate slow.
Yeah. 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 Oh, you're giving me the shivers because it's just like... I know I said that was my last question, but one's just come to mind because at the end of the day, freediving is a sport. And I've seen when people dive down the line, and is there like a little tag?
Yeah.
Is that where you grab the tag and that's the depth that you've wanted to dive to? Have you ever been in a situation where you're close to your depth, and how do you make the decision of to go for it or no, I can't now? That must be incredibly hard because at the end of the day, it's a sport, but also those extra few moves, I guess, could be the difference between coming up and not coming up. Is that something you trained? Obviously, you trained for, but is it a hard decision?
Yeah.
What's it years?
Yeah. Yes and no. I've done dives where I should have turned before the bottom. When I dive, the line's set for the depth that I want to do. And the tags are at the bottom as proof. I have to take a tag as proof that I went to that depth. So it's instant proof for the judges on the surface that I've been there, you know, without them having to check my dive computer. I always have an official gauge on so they can check the dive computer, but it's an instant, rather than coming over having a look at the dive computer, it's an instant, you know, the tag is there to prove that I've actually been there. And I've continued I've continued to dives before when I should have turned. And usually for me, it's equalization. If I turn early on a dive, it's usually because of my equalization. And, you know, the eardrums stretch a bit. It's not safe practice. It's not smart diving. It's not safe practice. And it's not something I should be doing. However, in a competition environment, when I'm so close to that tag, and that's the goal. I mean, the goal is to get up safely as well, but it's taking unnecessary risks. So if I burst my eardrums at depth, I'm going to be in horrific pain, possibly experience vertigo going up, which, you know, no one wants when they're 80 meters deep or at all. And then I'm going to be months out of the water.
Okay.
So it's, you know, at best, you know, if I've got a ruptured eardrum, 3-4 weeks, if not longer. So I've pushed my eardrums before in dives to get tags. And I promised myself last year that that's not how I wanted to dive. And that when I can't equalize, I turn, which is best practice, you know, which is, you know, what we all do, what we all say, what we do, what we all talk about doing. You know, in reality, no, I didn't do that all the time. You know, there were times when I risked it. And I promised myself last year that I wouldn't do that. That's not how I want to progress as a diver. And also, it's not how I would coach. So,
right.
There is no way I would coach like that. And, you know, it's important to me to walk the walk.
Yeah.
And there's a video actually on my, from my competition in October last year of me turning like 2 meters from the bottom plate. There's one on my Instagram of that. And I was so proud of myself, because that would have been a national record dive. And I possibly could have made it, but I might have injured myself. And I was really proud of myself because I promised myself I wasn't going to take those risks, you know, and I didn't. So, and I turned. So yeah, I posted that video of me behaving how I should behave anyway and being proud of myself for it. I don't know, so that's quite right.
I love that. It's another lesson learned, isn't it? Yeah, it's so good. I mean, what's next for you? You're still teaching. You're still, you know, you do so much. You're still competing. What's kind of like your goals now moving forward? I know that's such a job interview. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Is there anything left on the bucket list?
Too many things. There's so many goals. I started working with a new coach in October, and he said to me, he asked me, what is your goal? So, you know, I reeled off like 3 things in my free diving, just in my free diving. And he said to me, he didn't, no S, goal. So I was like, oh, I'm like, okay. So I picked my goal. Okay. You'll see what it is.
Oh, amazing. I like it.
You're gonna see what it is.
I love it.
So that's what I'm working towards now.
Perfect.
My whole focus is on my free diving and on one goal, not multiple goals, which I'm really liking, because quite often I have multiple goals happening. And it's quite liberating to focus just on one. And making sure that I'm getting everything correct for that one thing, rather than splitting my energies and my efforts and my attention between a couple of things. So, yeah, I want to dive deeper. This is the goal of any depth free diver. Ask, what do you want to do? I just want to go deeper, because you know you go through, and you know, 40 is fine, and then you go through the 40s and you make 50 and that feels great, and it's like, and then, you know, it never stops.
You're stay like, but
it's like, this feels really good. But yeah, so it's training. I go to Egypt next week and start training there again. And I'm looking forward to that. I've got my first competition this year at the end of May, middle to end of May, in Sharm again. Do a lot of my competitions and training in Egypt. It's a really nice setup. It's, the water's warm. It's not a long haul flight, and there's good safety, and there's good medical care there as well, should there be any accidents in diving. So it's I like doing my training there.
Well, I'll definitely be following along with that journey, because now that we're connected on Instagram, and I'll be loving seeing what you're doing out there. Where can people find you on Instagram? You're at Ruth
Osborne Freediver.
Yeah.
Even if you spell Osborne wrong, it'll come.
We'll put a link in the description.
Freediver.
And please, everyone, go follow your journey, because it is incredible. Thank you so much for being such a beautifully open and honest guest, and I'm sure there's going to be so many women inspired by your story. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome. Oh, before we finish, because everyone gets one.
Ugh, I have here some little merch for you. No, I know. Is it hot in Egypt right now?
Yeah.
No, it's a cold evening. Your own little hoodie there for you through.
I need some warmer things, because it's gonna be very cold when I get out of my pool training. So this is gonna be perfect.
And you're welcome.
Thank you so much.
You embody everything about Shudez Wins. So I'd be incredibly proud to say that you are. You're repping exactly what you are, which is She Who Dares Wins.
I'm very proud to wear this. She Who Dares Wins. Empower, inspire, and be badass.
Which you totally are, so you nailed it.
Awesome.